presentation skills for design students. Episode 7.
Hit it!
Hello and welcome to Presentation Skills for Design Students. My name's Christina Canters, and this is the podcast dedicated to helping design students everywhere improve their presentation and communication skills. It doesn't matter if you do industrial design, architecture, applied arts, maybe you build Lego houses in your parents' garage. It doesn't matter. There's something we can all do to become confident, creative communicators. So, get ready to take your next presentation to a whole new level. Hi everyone, thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm very excited about today's show because I am chatting with the one and only Manuel Pineda, the Colombian architect, design comp guru, and guitar extraordinaire, whose design prowess has taken Melbourne by storm since his arrival in this fabulous city only a few years ago. But first, I have a quick question for you. Do you remember having an aha moment at school, college, or university when you learned a really important lesson? Maybe it was an inspiring piece of advice from a teacher, or maybe your lecturer caught you sleeping in class, or maybe you sliced your finger off during an all-night model-making session. Whatever it is, I would love to hear your story from Studio. All you need to do is just go to designdrawspeak.com/story and record your message there. Now, if you get a bit stuck for words, just get a friend to ask you some questions to prompt you, like it's a mini 60 second interview. And remember, the more you practice doing these sorts of things, the easier it will get. Now, usually I share a listener's story at the start of each episode, but for today I asked Manuel to think of a story from his time at university. So you'll hear that during the interview, which we will jump into right about now. Today's special guest is my good friend, Manuel Pineda. For those of you who don't know Manuel, he, together with his colleague and friend Eduardo Velasquez, won the People's Choice Award in the Flinders Street Station Design Competition. Now, this was an international competition to rejuvenate and restore Melbourne's iconic Flinders Street Station. Out of the 118 entries received, they were shortlisted in the final six, and the other five were from big architectural firms from Australia and overseas. So this was just an absolutely remarkable achievement. And not only this, they won the People's Choice Award by a mile, and this was determined by 19,000 public votes from all around the world. How incredible is that? So you can check out all the entries at voteflindersstreet.com.au, and that's street spelt with an ST, so it's like voteflindersst.com.au. I know, a bit confusing. But anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes for that. So that will be at designdrawspeak.com/007. Now, not only is Manuel super talented and passionate about design, he is also one of the most genuine, thoughtful, and humble people I know. He's got great advice and lots of awesome stories to share, so I really hope you enjoy this interview. Manuel, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Christina. It's actually a pleasure to be here on your podcast today.
Have you listened to any of my episodes so far?
Not so far. I've been reading your blog, to be honest, which is a lot. And actually, I liked the last one you wrote about, like, the life-changing experience. Which actually I kind of like, and I told you, which, you know, actually was quite helpful because it helped me to give an advice to a friend of mine that she was like having those stress, she was having trouble dealing with stress. So I told her about like the power of words and changing into like I could, and like changing the have to do it to I could do it, or, you know, stuff like that, like taking the pressure off your back.
Well, for those of you listening who don't know what Manuel's talking about, he's referring to my blog, which is kipsandkale.com, which I don't know, I think it's on the Design Draw Speak website somewhere there, but that's just a place where I blog about how to not be stressed and other things. So anyway, Manuel, we didn't come here to speak, you didn't come here to speak about my blog. So Manuel, can you just give us a brief overview of where you're from and your journey so far in coming to Melbourne?
As you know, I'm an architect from Colombia. I started studying architecture in 2003 and finished my architecture degree in 2007. And before I actually graduated, I worked in a construction and design company and worked there until 2011, when I decided to run away, basically, and pursue, like, you know, as an architect, you basically need to travel and see what's outside of your city or your country. And what better to do than actually, like, jumping onto the other side of the world, basically. That's for Australia, for us, is like the other side. It's unknown, it's exciting. And then I actually wanted to leave, but I wanted to do something really productive. So I start doing my Master of Architecture. And I just completed my Master of Architecture in 2012. My original plan was just to do the Master of Architecture and go back to Colombia, because as you know, I'm registered architect there. But as many of you know, like, the Flinders Street station happened, and as well, like, on the long run, doing the master degree, I realized, like, actually kind of want to see how much I actually can get from working and like getting some more experience in Australia.
Can you give us a brief rundown of how you got involved in the Flinders Street competition?
Well, like, as you know, Flinders Street, the original design came from Eduardo, at least the basic idea. That was his thesis design idea. When the competition actually opened, when the original brief came, because before that there was no brief, there was just like a draft of the brief. So when the brief came, Eduardo came to me and said, like, probably there's this thing, like, the chance to get into the competition. And we are really used to the competitions in Colombia. It's actually something really common for us, you know, like, most of the competitions in Colombia are open competitions. So we have done a couple, but Eduardo and myself, we never worked together, so that would be actually quite an experience. And I say, okay, let's do it. Something that not a lot of people know is just, like, we almost quit two times, like, not submitting the design at the end. One is actually the day of the inscription. Got a call from Eduardo, like, saying, like, probably he couldn't do it. So actually I had to insist to him, and his girlfriend support me as well in that stuff, actually trying to convince him at the end, like, we had to get into the competition, because he actually wanted me to give me the basic idea and told me to actually I just keep going with it. And I say, no, I cannot do it without you, like this is the two of us, or this is not going. The other major setback was a day before the first stage mission. We lost all the files, Photoshop files, they were nowhere. And so basically there was a lot of work that was left to be done. And this happened around like 10 o'clock at night, day before. And somehow actually we managed to come ourselves and pull it together and work the whole night. And we just submitted, and we just did it for the sake of the experience, to do something for ourselves and probably something that it will be on our portfolio. And later we found out that we got shortlisted, and the rest is basically what you saw in the news.
Yeah, it's like, crazy. I mean, to get shortlisted is an incredible achievement in itself. What was it like after you won People's Choice, after that was announced?
After it was announced, is when we first got shortlisted, we pictured it was quite huge. We later realized it was huge when we found out about, like, the other companies. We didn't know who were the other companies that got shortlisted until the names got released. We then knew it was big, but we still were not, like, aware of how big it was, like, outside of the architecture world. When the People's Choice came, and especially when the six projects got released to the public, that's when we realized the implications of the project, because like basically the media was pretty much into it. All the media was over us all the time, like this is amazing, like we were basically the underdogs. They want to know where we came from, how we worked for it. They want to talk to our about our proposal, and the people show it happen. At the end, it meant a lot for us because people actually do care about architecture. You know, this got a lot of attention of it, and it started like an architectural discourse that it was just not an architectural discourse from architects. Actually, it was an architectural discourse from the citizens, like people that's using the station itself, and it started and it became this like kind of a political issue as well. You know, and now like the government. The Napton government is seeing this project probably with a different eyes. Now seeing the amount of attention this project got from people from Melbourne and as well people from outside of Australia or outside from Melbourne.
Mm. Well, it definitely got a lot of worldwide exposure. And I read that almost 19,000 people voted, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. We actually were joking about it because Napton actually came to us the day of the of the ceremony when we were awarded the People's Choice, and he said like, look, you guys, like there were a lot of Colombians voting in there, and then Eduardo and I look at ourselves and we said like, like well yeah it's true, but like we got a lot of votes, but there's like the amount of votes we got, like we don't have those many friends in Colombia, to be honest. We don't have 1,000 friends in Colombia. Like it's fairly not possible as well. There's actually people from the outside that like the design and vote for us and they like the idea.
I've seen you guys present your project. I was just so impressed by your focus on how people use the scheme and interact with it rather than it being, you know, like this standalone big crazy sculptural, you know, piece of art. And your passion just really showed through in your presentation. I mean, so why is this? Why is this so important?
Uni back in Colombia has to do a little bit of it, I guess. Like it might be. Colombia used to be known as like probably one of the most violent countries in the world. My city, Medellin, was the dangerous city in the world back in the 90s, 80s. At the end of the 90s and throughout like the 2000s and all those years to come, come through a massive transformation. And we saw it. Like we saw like the part of architecture, what it can bring to like to a public space, how it can change an entire neighborhood if it's done properly, you know. This architecture that is beautiful, is simple, and it fits a purpose, you know, and people use it, and it transforms, it's being used there. And so we grew up seeing that, and we end up calling it like social architecture. And the meaning behind social architecture, it is that if a building is not used by people, is basically is worthless. Social sustainability basically is the first thing you had to have in mind when you're designing.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good way also for students to stay enthused about their project, and particularly for architecture students, if you find that you're sort of struggling for ideas, you know, think about the people that use it, and think about the stories that people can create and share as they use your building. And I think that would really help to sort of inform your ideas and inform the design.
Well, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell, you know, like you can never tell how someone is going to use a building. You can suppose, you can guess, but probably the best thing you can do is actually offering them the options to do something, you know. No, don't think of architecture as something sterile, but like you can think about like how many possibilities I can give to someone or to anyone that's going to use the building.
Now, Manuel, I'd like to talk a little bit about the presentations that you've been giving, as this podcast is all about presentation skills.
Yeah.
How was it different presenting to the media and to other architects and the jury as opposed to presenting to your tutors and fellow students in a design presentation?
how different it is. Okay. Well, we have presented, I don't know how many times we have presented already. Every time we're going to present, we want to know to which kind of audience we're presenting. It's not the same presenting to students. It's not the same presenting to architects that are already working there and they know the market. It's not the same presenting to engineers. You know, it's different targets. So when you know who actually you're presenting to, you probably the presentation structure is kind of the same, but like the opening to get to set their minds into the project is different. You know, you want to kind of like engage them in the project, and later you kind of want to grab elements of what you have presented before, and put it there. Like for example, if I'm presenting to a construction company like AECOM, we try to have a little bit of a structure, the services we did for the project. But if we're presenting for architects, then it becomes more about like the architectural design, the architectural project itself. We're presenting to the media with we it was more like questions and answers. We
Well,
tried to
how did you go answering the questions from the media?
guess it went pretty well to be our first time actually to be in the media. We tried to be really concise with the project, like how to explain it, how to sell it, and how to actually explain it in basically three lines. And it was clear for us from the beginning that it was a project for the people, and that's basically what it is. It's not a train station. This is more than a train station. It's a project where it means a lot more to the city. And that's how actually we start explaining the project to the media. The first one that deal with the media was myself, because I was at that point he was in New York. So I stay here dealing with all the stuff. At the beginning was quite nervous to deal with it, but what I did is actually I pushed myself aside of everything and trying to calm myself before all the questions came.
How did you do
And
that?
it was a really cold day and I was kind of crowded, so it was really hard to find like a spot where I could actually meditate. So I just like literally just closed my eyes for like 2 minutes and took a deep breath and then just calm myself basically, and then trying to speak clearly, which is sometimes it's really hard for me n not being a natural English speaker. But I don't know, like they just do the first question, and if the first one went, the first answer went well, and then it just goes straight forward, basically.
And I guess it becomes quite easy when you've already been speaking about it for so long and when you are so passionate about this project.
Well, yeah, we kind of know the project. We love architecture, and you are aware of it. We basically are 100% passionate about it. We just cannot get enough of it. But the most important thing is like we know the project really well. We were on this project for 9 months. We did a couple of more projects during the Flint District competition, which our project manager thought we were not, and we probably were. But Flinders Street Station was the main one, and we know it into some detail that actually was really simple for us to explain it. And it became so easy for us to explain it that it actually reminds us like something like probably this quote about Albert Einstein, like if you can explain a project or an idea in really simple words, basically you know it. You actually really know about it.
You
And
know, 9 months is a very long time to be working on one project, when
yes.
especially when it's a competition like this. You know, during semester, students will often, well, I mean, will be working on projects for how many months? Maybe four, like
Four, 2 months,
12 weeks.
or less.
I know when I was studying, I used to get so sick of my project by the end because I was just so absorbed in it and there was sort of nothing else and I just got so sick of it. What advice do you have for students now who are just losing enthusiasm for their projects because they're just getting sick of it?
That's a good question. I guess I get a hobby. Like I could, because we were working really hard on this. We were working 7 days, 17 hours, 14 hours, 17 hours a day sometimes, the 7 days a week. But we always try to have a little bit of like do something out, something from the outside. You know, I tend to do a lot of exercise. I play the guitar as well, so that as well takes my mind off. You know, trying to do something that actually takes your mind a little bit off what you're doing, because your brain is gonna get tired, and when it starts getting tired, your brain is gonna start looking for ways to get out, to get away from it. You know, it can feel the pressure. So we did that as well. We did two other competitions in the same time, and we did another one afterwards. So that thing as well help us.
Just doing something else to take your mind off it.
Yeah, and if you do a different project as well, if you want to still do an architecture, but probably you want to jump into another project as well, doing a side project helps as well. You know, it helps like freshen your mind. Mm. Because seeing the same project over and over again, you start getting into this cycle of which actually can be quite dangerous at times.
Yeah. Now, what is it about competitions that you love so much?
Well, it's like a real life studio, you know. Basically, you're putting your ideas there, and it's your own idea, and there's a big chance in most of them that the project can be done. It's quite fun to do a competition itself, but it's really nice when you find out actually your ideas, they are out there, and at one point actually they have been recognized by someone. You know, they saw something good in the effort we put into it. So it's quite exciting to do that. I don't know.
Now I just love your passion for architecture and design. It's just amazing. It just shines through whenever you're talking about it. What do you love most about being an architect?
what do I love most about being an architect? Yes. Actually, I like hand drawings. That's probably one of the things that I can actually get lost when I'm trying to design something, come with a new project, is when it's me with a sheet of paper and I start like drafting something. I can get lost, but that's probably what I love most about what I do.
Mm.
Second of all, seeing a project done, I have a couple of projects that they're not the prettiest projects, you know, but at the end, seeing something that you work really hard with and something that you have on your drawing table, and at the end, you know, you see it get it built, is a really, really nice experience as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. That must just be so rewarding.
Yeah, it really is. Basically, it is.
I had a little. I worked on a little pergola extension for a school once, and it was just a really quick thing. And it was one of the very first things I worked on at work. And I got in SketchUp and I modeled up this little thing, and they built it like 4 weeks later. And I went there and saw it, and it was amazing. I was like, oh my goodness, it's like my SketchUp model in real life. And that was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, no, that's probably one of the most exciting things you can get as an architect as well. It's like seeing your product actually being there and someone using it is probably the best thing there. Like you say, like this guy is using something that a couple of months ago I actually had in my drawing table. He has no idea how much effort I had to put on it actually to come with that idea. That's probably one of the most rewarding things as well in what I do.
Mm. All right, Manuel. Well, everyone that I interview on this show, I like to play a little game with them. Would you like to play a game?
Okay.
It's okay. It's not. It's just a very simple game. It's called The Two Things. Have you heard of The Two Things?
No.
Okay. Well, it's based on the idea that for every subject, there are really only two things that you really need to know. And everything else is just the application of those things, or it's just not important. So, for example, the two things about playing guitar. Number one, learn the G, D, E minor, C progression. And number two, get a capo.
Okay, if you say so.
Would you agree with that, or maybe listen to other two things about guitar?
For me, actually, like there's a lot of people actually that they are self-taught and they don't know actually about like G or E or like what you said afterwards.
Oh, so it's not that important. Okay.
No, actually, the first thing when you jump into using a guitar is A, you start practicing skills. You know, you start doing the skills, like trying to get a like trying to not be so rigid with your, especially with your left hand.
Okay.
If you are actually right-handed with a guitar, so like with your left hand is where you have like you start like punching the strings. So you're trying to be more agile with that stuff.
And the second thing.
And the second is actually the way you struck the guitar. You know, that's the other thing. Actually, I think it's really important. And I guess the tempo is actually really important there as well.
No, that's three. You're only allowed two.
Okay, so take away the way you struck the guitar and put the tempo.
Okay, tempo, so tempo.
Tempo is really important.
Okay, so the first one was the scales.
Yeah, scales. Trying to be because it's not worth if you actually know a note, but you still have no your hand is still quite rigid and you cannot pull it together. So
okay, yeah. So scales and tempo. There you go. That's Manuel's top two things about playing guitar.
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, I actually learned by myself. Probably if you talk to a professional instructor, he's gonna tell you something different, and you're gonna come to me and say Manuel is lying. But yeah, that's my point of view.
Okay. Now the other two things I wanted to ask you was, what are the two things about architectural competitions?
Two things. One, and don't take this literally,
okay,
please, is don't take too serious the brief. I'm not saying don't read it. I'm saying don't take it too seriously. Don't take it into every word, and because it's gonna hold you into about like doing a lot of things. We in the all the competitions I have done so far, we have broken a lot of rules, and that actually has given us a lot of freedom to express ourselves with what we want to achieve.
Would you say that would also apply for a student project? So at uni, if you're given a brief.
I have seen some projects, like if you're going to challenge the brief at uni, you had to justify what you actually challenge it. And if you have a really good argument, probably your tutor and whoever is going to judge you in the judging panel is going to agree with you. You know, I have seen some projects that they have challenged the brief and they have a really strong argument, and you say, well, this is actually not bad. Like, actually, he's right. You know, and the outcome is quite great. So you had to be really strong in that. Like, you must have an argument to do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. And sorry, the second thing?
Give yourself some time to come with an idea, and then you test it. So okay. It's basically idea, test, then again, and you know, like the architecture process is not like a circle, like a really pure circle. It's basically like this tangled wire, which basically you just go back and forward. It's basically an idea, you test it, like it, you go back, another idea, test it again, and it's basically that.
Okay. So the two things were, don't be afraid to challenge the brief.
Yep.
And give yourself time to formulate an idea and test it.
Yep.
Awesome. That's so good.
Yeah. And there are like funny stories as well. You told me like about like a story about uni.
Oh, yes, I did. I did mention to Manuel earlier, everyone, about how I like to share a story from studio each week. Do you have a story to share?
Yeah, I have a couple of them. I have one of my own and I have another one from someone I know.
Okay.
You want to hear them both?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So first one actually happens to me on my first semester in Colombia, which was 2003, 10 years ago. Wow. Okay, so this is the year we call like the kindergarten in architecture, which you're just starting like to draw. You have you've experimented with colors, and it's basically a kindergarten. I was building a model. We had to present like four models of for different options of the project. So I was working on this model, which was based on the pixels. So like you can imagine, like I was cutting piece by piece and extruded the facade. And I had to build a structure for it, which actually I did it. There was like these aluminium wires itself. So it took me 5 days, non-sleeping, to do it, just to explain the idea. So, okay, day before, the day actually I was about to present it, I actually got into my car, put the model in there. Everything seemed fine. I was heading to uni. And this old lady, which was driving quite bad, actually crossed me, and so I actually had to hit the brake. And the first thing I actually saw, in really slow motion, was my model going forward.
Oh no!
And it hit in the front panel, and it completely smashed into the front panel. And I was like, I hadn't slept in 5 days, and then I have the thing I worked so hard smashed in the floor of my car. So I just like couldn't believe it. So anyway, I went with this really sad expression, like puppy expressions, to my classroom, and I don't know how I did actually. I just managed to calm down, explain the project itself, because the idea was good. The idea still was really good. And I still have like bits of pieces of the model, like one there. So I actually managed to pull it together. My teacher then looked at me and said, like, don't stress about the model. Like, we like the idea. The idea is really strong. If the idea is really strong, that's what's matter, you know. So like, don't stress about it. Just keep working really hard, which I was already. And actually, while you think it's going to be the end of the world, it isn't, you know, at the end. That was pretty much what I got from that experience. The other one is basically from a guy from a unit as well in Colombia. You know, at that time we used to do all the drawings by freehand drawings or like on a drawing table. There was no use of AutoCAD. All was by hand. So there were like countless nights in front of the drawing table. Night before the final submission, he had a cup of coffee next to his drawings. And you know, you can be kind of goofy when you have no sleep. So accidentally he slipped a coffee over one of his drawings, and it was the night before.
Oh no!
So what normally you would do is actually panicking, and you say, "Ah, breaking this, what I'm gonna do?" The guy actually grabbed the other sheets he had, and he poured coffee on them and actually make this thing he had, like with, like of the first drawing that was actually, he thought it was damaged, actually he turned it into a layout, and he poured the coffee in the other drawings, actually became the layout of his presentation.
That is so
and
clever.
And that was problem solved. And it was actually, you know, like it's never the end of the world. It's always a solution for what you're doing.
So turn an error or a mistake into part of your drawing.
There's always a solution.
Wow. That's amazing. What a great story.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks so much for sharing that, Manuel. Oh, it's been so great to chat to you. And it's been awesome hearing about your experiences and all the tips that you have as well to share. So thanks so much.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you for having me.
And we look forward to, I look forward to seeing many more competition wins from you and Eduardo in the future.
I probably will come in the future. For now, we're going to be working for a company, and if another competition comes out, we're probably going to be doing it, but just give it time.
We'll be seeing your names in lights again. Thank you.
You never know. Thanks, Christina.
Doesn't Manuel have some awesome stories? I think we can all learn something from what he's shared, especially about not stressing when things go pear-shaped. You know, just stay calm and take it all in your stride. Anyway, check out the show notes at designdrawspeak.com/007, where I'll put a link to the Flinders Street Design Competition website, where you can check out Manuel and Eduardo's People's Choice Award-winning entry. Now, I've been absolutely stoked to see the number of podcast downloads go up and up and up. Just as of a few days ago, it's clocked up more than 600 downloads in the first 6 weeks, which makes me rather happy. So thank you for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, I would absolutely love it if you could leave me an iTunes rating. Just search for Design Draw Speak in iTunes and click on ratings and reviews to leave your own. That would be amazing, and it would absolutely make my Christmas. Now, I hope you have a safe and delicious festive season. Yeah, we're on holidays! This has been Presentation Skills for Design Students, helping you become a confident, creative communicator.